Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very last day of January, Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, for your edification and delectation, we're going to be bringing you news and views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. In a decision that absolutely everybody saw coming, Microsoft is finally realizing that people utterly hate the AI slop, bad decisions, and crappy quality assurance that have been the hallmark of the last year. They've actually begun to notice that people are not only keeping Windows 10, but even returning to it after installing 11. And don't think they haven't been keeping an eye on the skyrocketing numbers of monthly Linux installs and how popular Linux is not only for desktop work, but also for gaming. Now they want to rebuild trust with their user base.
That's a good joke.
Might be a little too little too late.
Think
but we'll
so?
See.
Yeah.
Particularly for Windows 11 going forward. Pavan Davuluri, the president for Microsoft Windows and Devices Business, has said that Microsoft insiders are being loud and clear in what they want. Updates that are meaningful for people. And that Microsoft's overwhelming focus on AI and enterprise isn't cutting it for them. One thing they've announced is a feature they're graciously accepting from Linux. Power Toys, Microsoft's set of extra features for power users, is set to include the new Command Palette Dock. If you've ever used the top menu bar on a Linux or Mac computer, you're already familiar with it and what it can do. For the rest of you, you can dock utilities to it. For example, monitor your system resources without opening the task manager. You can customize it to your liking. Very handy. The big thing is that they've heard the deep and abiding hatred for AI and its grating intrusion into everything, whether you want it or not. They've said they will actually address this during the coming year. Pause for horse laugh. Of course, promises are cheap, so we'll see. The report is that they're actually stopping to consider the actual value being offered by AI integration in its existing products. How novel. The future of Windows Recall is also unclear. You'd think that would be the first thing on the chopping block, but it's hard to give up all the juicy data they're collecting on you. Semantic search, agentic workspace, Windows ML, and Windows AI APIs are safe from the chopping block, as these back-end technologies do serve developers and eventually users, assuming you want more AI in your system. On the other hand, while complaining about Windows 11 as a popular sport, it remains the most widely used operating system on the world's desktop and laptop computers. In fact, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella said on the company's most recent earnings call that Windows 11 now has over 1 billion with a B users worldwide. Whether that's love for the product or just inertia, it's still a whole passel of users, and Windows 11 reached that milestone about 100 days earlier than Windows 10 did. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft says it will fix pain points in Windows 11 this year. And your choices are, it's about stinking time. That'd be nice. I'll believe it when I see it. And I don't have pain points. I don't use Windows. So far, we have 32 votes. And I'll believe it when I see it is just ahead of I don't have pain points, I don't use Windows. And, of course, voting in the poll is super easy. All you have to do is head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And you can vote in the poll. You can also see all the interesting other stuff we've got there. And and, of course, you can also see our numbers there. If you'd like to give us a call, that's easy, too. It's at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415.
We're running into similar things on the Mac side where people aren't upgrading to OS 26, mostly because everyone hates liquid glass. I don't want my interface to be transparent. I can't see the button.
Well, okay. So In many of the various Linux GUIs, you can also set that transparency.
Yeah.
Or translucency or whatever. I don't care what you call it. Most people turn it off because it's dumb.
Yeah.
So because it distracts you. Unless you've got an absolutely plain black background. And in that case, what's the point?
In 26.2, they've actually added a button to basically turn it all off.
Yeah.
But without admitting, what is it? We admit no wrongdoing, but here's how to fix it.
Yeah. right. So the thing is that people are, look, I understand what Microsoft is doing. You have to feel bad for them. They don't have enough money.
I feel for them, but I'm sitting.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I have that same problem.
Well, unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about it. But Microsoft, who remember, their customers are the people who have their stocks. They're the stockholders.
We're just beta testers.
We're the product that Microsoft sells to the shareholders. That's the truth. That's true of every publicly traded company, okay? So what Microsoft has to do, and investors, their attitude is, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
Not, you made me $1 million last year. What did you do for me this quarter?
This is a new week.
Yeah. Right.
What have you done?
Right. So they have to figure out ways to keep bringing in revenue. Somebody there had the phenomenally brilliant idea that AI is cheaper than people. So they fired a bunch of people and gave all their jobs to AI. What they're discovering now is that AI is, what's the technical term? Crap. And so they've been putting out products that are crap. And literally, now they have to backpedal. They have to go and rehire a bunch of people. They have to go back and look at code that's been written by AI. Good luck with that. And fix all the mistakes and make all the changes. And it's not going to be easy, and it's going to cost them a lot of money. Spoiler alert, they've got
bucket loads
of money. They've got more money than Croesus. They've got more money than everybody but Apple. So I think that they're not going to be in any pain, except that the shareholders' shares will only go up like 18% instead of 19%. So, that's where we stand, and that's what the problem is that they've tried to cut corners to make money, and the corners they cut were important corners.
Well, plus people are getting tired of being beta testers, because basically that's what it is. Every time they come out with a damn patch Tuesday, you're praying that it's not going to brick your system. You know, and mess the other things up that were working fine before, thank you.
Well, the first thing they cut was the QA system, quality assurance people.
Yeah,
because
the people who... Exactly, because they were people.
Yeah.
And those were the people who tested Linux Windows on every version, on every, a lot of different hardware. Now, granted, I understand, I truly do sympathize with Microsoft's problem. There are an infinite, literally infinite number of options that people have in their computers, the different hardware and the different software that they run. I truly do understand that. But there are some basic things, like Windows not shutting down when you say shut down, that somebody should have caught. But there isn't a somebody to catch it anymore. It's all being done by AI.
It's more of a suggestion than I really want to shut down.
Shut down, maybe.
Maybe.
Let's toss a coin.
Yeah, let's think about this for a few minutes.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Jack from Gates, New York. What's up, Jack?
I have Linux that I installed for the first time on a couple of my computers last fall.
Congratulations.
And, I use the machine and I power it up, and I make sure I hit that little icon to load up updates when it says there's something there. But I also have a Windows 11 machine.
Yeah.
So what I don't understand is, okay, the Windows sends out updates. And I can visualize there's some big corporate building where someone's gathering up different problems and different things they want to improve, and some other committee takes that and they prioritize what's the most important, and then they assign this to programmers who've got the suitable skills to do that, and it gets tested, and then someone decides when they're going to put them out. I have no idea. How does all that kind of work in what they call this open source environment of Linux, when there's no corporate building.
Well, okay, so one thing you have to remember is you talked about a committee. We all understand that in a committee, they have to reach a consensus. And the definition of consensus is an answer that satisfies nobody equally.
Mm-hmm.
So what you end up with is you almost get there. In Linux, much of it is community driven. So it's people with passion, people who do this because they want to do it, not because it's the job they could get. So when they find a problem, they just fix it.
And
let me finish this. The structure of Linux is that pretty much anybody on the planet can see a problem, write a fix, and submit it to the Linux people. Ultimately, Linus Torvalds.
Now, who are the Linux people?
Linus Torvalds and about a half a dozen of people that he trusts are the people who have the final say of what goes into Linux. Now, here's the interesting thing. Linux is essentially a meritocracy. You gain credit by how good you are at something. So people don't submit patches until they are sure it's right.
And not going to screw things up.
And not going to screw up anything. And then it's given to people whose sole job is to make it fail. And if they don't make it fail...
True beta testers,
then it can go into... Then it can be considered for import into the kernel. And there's a whole bunch of things that go into whether or not it can go in the kernel.
But, and none of these people are paid a dime for all the time they put in?
Some of them are, in fact, paid by a company. Like Canonical hires people to write code for them. But it still has to go through this vetting process.
And each flavor of Linux often comes from a separate group.
Right.
Nonprofit groups, usually. And that's where your updates come from. So the community updates a piece of code, and then that goes to Cinnamon or Ubuntu or Canonical or whoever, and then they introduce it into their code base, and then that gets pushed out to all the people who have that specific Linux.
Because remember, the way Linux works is you can add anything you want to the kernel, but it has to be allowed. You have to be able to look at the source code, and you have to be able to let everybody else use it. So if, say, Mint gets a feature that's really hot, everybody else is going to look at it and say, oh, let's put that in ours.
Yeah.
And they can.
And everybody else could correct anything they see that might be wrong with it.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And that happens constantly. If you were to go, believe me, if you want to waste a couple of years of your life, go look at the Linux developer forums. People arguing back and forth about the most incredibly minute, tiny. You think Star Trek people are bad? They're nothing. They're amateurs.
They're complaining that the captain doesn't sit in the chair properly and doesn't wear shoes now. That's the big complaint now.
It's still nothing compared to the way people complain about Linux. But that's what keeps Linux as clean as it is. It's people with a deep, abiding passion who are doing what they do because they love to do what they do. And you can't beat... That's how Linux got built to begin with. Linus Torvalds was looking at a program, an operating system called Minix, which was a mini version of Unix. And it ran on small... What we would think of as mainframes today, mm-hmm. and were considered yeah. small computers then.
Yeah, and Unix ran on mini computers, which were like refrigerators.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But he thought, I could write Minix for my XT, my IBM PC. And he called it Linux because his name was Linus, and it was Minix, so it was Linux. And he said, hey, you guys, I'm writing this kernel And here it is. Take a look at it and see what you think. And a whole bunch of people came in and said, okay, I love this. I don't like this. Let's add this. Why can't we put this? Let's do this. And suddenly there was an operating system.
Collaboration of mass ideas.
By people who had passion. And that's where Linux has been since day one. And that's why it's as clean as it is.
And that's what keeps driving it, is that passion and openness that it's open to other ideas, not shareholders.
Right. And yes, Canonical pays some people to do that. Red Hat pays some people to do that. Sun Microsystems paid people to do that. But it still had to go through that vetting process that was fueled entirely and solely by passion. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. It seems like one of the big advantages was this fellow, he was able to start fresh, right?
Right.
Ground up and build a better mousetrap. Someday in the future, do you think someone will start fresh again? Well,
both Russia and China are developing their own OSs, so they don't have to rely on the evil West although Linux is he's from Finland.
He's from Finland. But here's the thing. Because Linux is passion-based, it has changed over time. Originally, and I know this because I tried to install Yggdrasil Linux 100 times.
Norse Linux?
Back in the day, you had to build it from scratch. You can still do that with Arch if you want to. You had to build it from scratch, and it was a pain in the patoot. And, you know, weeks later, you might get a cursor, and you were shocked and thrilled. People sat down and said, you know what? We need to make this as easy to install as Windows. And now it is. And that's how it evolves. I don't know that we need... You could certainly create a fresh operating system that has nothing in common with Linux, and that may happen. But Linux is such a malleable base. It's so plastic underneath. You can do so much with it. Android is based on Linux. Mac OS is based on Mach, which is the same basic kernel.
Well, they've even BSD Unix. Right? They started sort of on the same track.
Building on, you could go from scratch, but it is much easier and faster to start with the base of Linux and build what you want on top of it.
And what else has helped perpetuate this since Windows has gotten so goofy is, all right, as far as installing programs, before you had to do all these iterations and this and that. Now they've created simple ways that you can go to the store, you know, and pick out a product and say, install.
Yep.
And Windows Linux will go ahead and do it and put it up there, and you know, the updates and everything else. You don't have to go through that. So that's built more and more folks coming from what they used to say is the dark side of this program into the light that, you know, folks are saying, hey, yeah, I like it. It looks like my old Windows, or it looks like my Mac, and you know, installing the program is no big deal. I just go over and do a search for a particular program I'm looking to do. It might not be the same as it was on Windows, but dang close to it.
Right.
I can select it, install it, I'm done.
And as to how these people make money, a lot of these companies sell support contracts. So you're probably not personally going to buy a support contract. In fact, if you're using Ubuntu, there's a thing called Ubuntu Pro, which you can put on up to 5 machines for free, and it does a lot of the updating and fixing and stuff in the background for you. But if you are a corporation, you can contract with your favorite flavor of Linux's company to do tech support for them, and that's how they make the money to pay the programmers.
Also, the ones that are formally organized as like a 501c3 nonprofit accept donations.
Right.
And large companies will donate to the Unix or the Linux project they are using for their in-house networking.
Right. That's cheaper than Windows.
Well, that's one of the requirements of Linux is if you create something new, you got to give it back to the community.
Right. And so that's really where it all comes from. It's the old shareware concept, essentially.
Yeah. Which usually was one or two people doing one great little program.
Because they had a passion for it.
Yeah.
As we say in the Linux community, they scratched their own itch, and other people had the same itch.
And that's why we've also said on here, you know, if you want to spend a few days, literally a few days, you could go through and do a search on YouTube videos for the different flavors of Linux. And you're going to spend a good week looking at all the different flavors and that and iterations and the way you can set them up to fit anybody's needs.
We have a frequent caller who's installed dozens, if not hundreds of them, just to play with them all.
If you want to see, if you want to really, now, and that's one of the problems that Linux has, right?
Yeah.
In the Mac world, there is only one GUI. You will use it. In the Windows world, there's only
one GUI.
You will use it.
With minor tweaks optional.
Very minor.
Very.
In Linux, you can make it look like a Mac. You can make it look like Windows. You can make it look like something you've never seen in your life before. Yep. You can make it look like the computers on Star Trek.
Because you have control of
there's
it. Which
an L-car's front end.
You don't have on the Windows and Mac.
Right. And that often leads to analysis paralysis. Right? People often say, oh, I don't know which version to pick. The spoiler alert, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because A, you can change it later if you want to, but B, just find something that you like. You can run almost every Linux version in a live distro. That is to say, you boot from the thumb drive and run it. And so you can get a feel for, does this make me happy? Does this not
make
me happy?
It's slower.
It's going to be a lot slower because it's coming off of a thumb drive to begin with, and it's compressed there, so it has to load it and uncompress it, and it's very slow. But you can get a feel for what it is. So you can try five or six different versions without ever touching your main computer and decide what you want. But we've gone far afield from your original question, which is, how does Linux get made? And it's basically passion. Passion is what made Linux, and that's why it is the way it is today.
From what you've told me, I think the biggest thing that Linux lacks is people with a passion for marketing, so more people know about it.
It's getting there, but it's getting there.
Well, and that's what Canonical and Red Hat and a couple of others are doing. Pop OS, which is part of System 76, which is a company that makes laptops, and you can get them with Pop OS on it, And, you know, they one of the things that Pop OS did was they did take their marketing people and say, how can we make this more palatable to the masses? But then they went back to the community and said, this is what we need. What do you want to do? And they found people with passion.
Thank you very much for answering my question. It was interesting.
I'm glad we could. Thanks, Jack. That was an interesting question to get. I worked years ago for Logical Operations, and for the longest time, every time I would see Barry Keeson, I'd say, Barry, how come you haven't hired me? And his answer was always, because I haven't got a job you'll like. And he was right. When he did hire me, he called me up and said, I found a job you'll like. Come and talk to me.
Cool.
Okay.
And that's what I did.
That was fair.
Right. And that's the way the company was back then. Everybody did what they did because they liked what they did.
Yeah, and if you don't like what you're going to do, you're not going to do a good job.
That's exactly. But if you do like it, you're going to do a great job.
And stick around and do that much more.
Exactly right.
And that was always neat about going to the big trade shows, is that all the shareware publishers were often there.
Yes.
And you could chat and talk about the programs. And that was like you'd say, oh, I wish it could do this. And by the next day, it did.
Yep.
They went home and went back to the hotel and stayed up all night to add that to the code.
Well, yeah. I can remember one show that Nick and I were at, and we tried to tell Intel they're missing the market. Or no, it was AMD.
No, it was Intel, and it was in the basement of St. Stephen's Episcopal Church with the Frog Group.
Yeah, and we told him, he goes, what? I go, you own just about every machine. When it boots up, it should have your logo.
Yeah.
Your simple logo on the chip, the boot chip, saying Intel inside. Yep. And never went with it.
Well, then
they certainly did.
Well, they made the stickers.
They made the stickers for the outside.
But the sticker.
That's us. That's us.
But
it was the BIOS company name would come up before.
The BIOS company's name would come up.
Before now the actual hardware
But that's where the guy said, well, I could take, you know, I put stickers on it. I go, yeah, we can peel the sticker off here and put it on there. How do I know it's any good?
That's exactly right.
Yep. There's a former supermodel, Lindsay Scott, who was a computer coding geek. She went to Amherst College.
Nice.
She's got 37,000 points on Stack Overflow.
Oh, real nice. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbite, so give us a call, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next.
Soundbite, your name?
Supported Jazz 90.1.
Brian, where are your songs?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian from Gates, New York on the line. What's up, Brian?
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Trying to stay cool. I'm just trying to stay cool.
You're pretty cool.
Trying to warm up is hard work. I don't like hard work.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's hard work to keep warm. So I'm just going to stay cool. I mean, I don't like hard work. Anyway, I've known you for a while, right?
I know, and really, there should be compensation, but there isn't. I'm sorry.
You know,
our sympathies.
But no, I never realized how prescient, how brilliant your mind works. Because
where did you find that one?
On TV, there's an ad, and there's two people next to an assembly line with the big arms, you know, doing cars. And it's gone crazy. They're smashing the windows and breaking up the hoods. And there's two people watching it go by. And the tall one says, what do we do about it? The short one says, well, we're going to have to find somebody who can code in COBOL. The big one says,
yeah.
What's COBOL?
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So, for all that, you knew that years before this came up on a TV ad.
Yep, I've said that for decades. Every time somebody asks me what they should learn as a to be a computer programmer, COBOL and Fortran, those will never ever go out of style.
Yeah, those three plus PL1
and PL1.
Yeah, PL1 was at Kodak. That was our language there. But I had my share of COBOL and Fortran too.
COBOL and Fortran are both still used today. Mm-hmm. Fortran mostly in banking. COBOL. Well, both of them.
Yeah.
And so, you're right, Brian. That's if you know and nowadays there are so few people who know it. Everybody's chasing the new hotness, right? Right now it's Rust and what's the other one? I forget. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. Those are the new hotness right now. You see people say, oh, this. Here's a new thing, and it's coded in Rust. I don't care what it's coded in. I simply don't care.
The developer of Rust posted a thing where saying he just got a rejection letter from a company because he doesn't have 10 years experience in Rust. I invented it 2 years ago.
That happened to the guy who invented Java.
Yeah, like every new language. Yeah,
he applied for a job, and they said we need someone with 5 years experience. He said, the language is only 3 years old. How do I know that? I wrote it.
Oops.
Well, keep entertaining yourself.
Well, I'm the only one who is entertained. I'll write a joke for one person. You know that about me.
Yes, I know. Yeah. They're mostly pretty awful.
Well, yeah, I didn't say it wasn't. I just said I wrote it for me. Thanks, Brian.
Have a good time, guys.
Yep, you too.
Bye.
That scene in The Martian where they figured out he was going to Mars Pathfinder, a mission from the 70s.
Right.
And they had to dig everyone out that was still alive that worked on that. And they still had the engineering model in a warehouse somewhere.
Yep, yep. It's
the rest of it was stupid that he was interfacing with the engineering model. That it's still radio.
Well, it's still radio. But the thing is, it was. I won't go. Yep. It's a great show. It's a great movie.
Yeah, Pathfinder was the one that bounced, right? I think so.
I think you're right.
The 7 minutes from Heck,
yeah,
where the Curiosity and Opportunity were, you know, lowered the Sky Crane and on retro rockets and lowered it. So Pathfinder, they dropped it from orbit and it bounced on giant airbags for a few miles before it actually landed.
And then, right, because I remember they had to figure out a way to make it right itself just in case. Yep.
Well, and then it opened into three panels,
right,
that were all the solar panels, and then Pathfinder could roll off.
Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, back to the phones, Arne. What?
Sojourner, the little tiny rover in the Pathfinder base station.
Right. Next caller is Bob from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Bob?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I am the proud owner of a new Mac Mini.
Congratulations.
Thanks to replace about a 7-year-old one. And I'm most of the way through the transition. A couple questions. One is the new one has a smaller internal drive than the old one. It had a terabyte and the new one's 500 gigs. So I had to squeeze down a little, and that's fine. But I want to put a bunch of stuff on an external drive, and I'm wondering, will that work better with an external solid state or an external regular hard disk drive? Would that be okay?
Both will be limited by the interface.
Okay.
So if you use a USB drive, that's 5 gigabits per second, so that's pretty slow. Thunderbolt drives are significantly faster, but they're also like double the price of a USB drive. So what people typically do is they'll put things they're not using all the time on the external drive, and then the internal drive is fast, and so that's where you put your stuff you use a lot. Like, your photo library would be on the internal drive, but your music library could be on the external drive, because it only needs to load, you know, a 3-minute song every 3 minutes, so that's not very much.
Now, I know there's a Thunderbolt cable that will plug into the same port. Is the drive different also, or just the
yes?
Cable? You need a drive.
Yeah, Thunderbolt. Cable. Thunderbolt is a faster interface. To make it confusing, both Thunderbolt and USB both use the Type C connector now. But they are completely different interfaces. You need a Thunderbolt drive and a Thunderbolt cable. So if you get a Thunderbolt drive, it won't work with a USB cable, and a USB drive won't work with a Thunderbolt cable, so you have to get them both. What's interesting is people have torn apart Thunderbolt cables because they're expensive. There's a computer at each end of the Thunderbolt cable that handles the data transfer in multiple lanes of traffic, which is how it's faster than USB. So USB is usually fast enough for most things, but if you want true speed, then you go to Thunderbolt. Especially like video editors, they'll use Thunderbolt drives because that's the only thing fast enough to record video onto.
Right. So if you keep your programs and the operating system on the internal drive and keep your data on the external drive, again, as Steve said, it depends on what those data are. But in general, those don't necessarily need to load as fast as the programs do.
Right. Understand. Now, I'm taking it that you said it's more expensive, but it's faster, and it's a subjective call, but is it, quote-unquote, worth it to spend more and get faster?
If you need it to be faster.
Yeah. If I was doing video editing, maybe, yeah.
Right.
There is a third-party upgrade for the SSD, but it's not for the faint of heart. It doesn't require desoldering.
There you go. That's something.
Yeah. Somebody did publish a YouTube video on desoldering the NAND storage drives.
No.
Yeah. How many did he break before he got that one to work perfectly?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not on a brand new one.
Right. Yeah. So, for example, on one of my systems, I have a spinning drive, a terabyte spinning drive connected through USB 3.0. And since I use it for data storage, And mostly what I do is documentation and graphics and stuff like that, but not video editing, just, you know, I'm touching up pictures and stuff. It's more than fast enough.
Yeah. Now, I got a related question if you got another minute.
Sure.
I have a 4-terabyte time machine drive for the old one. And I'm thinking I don't need, you know, 6 years of backup. But can I easily collapse that to the latest backup and reuse some of that space for something else?
Not easily.
Yeah.
Time Machine is designed to fill the drive, and when the drive gets full, it deletes the oldest backups.
Okay.
Now, let me ask this question. How big is your internal drive going to be? 500 gig?
500, yeah.
Okay. Would it be possible to attach an external 1-terabyte SSD, HDD, high-spinning drive,
yeah,
to the new machine and use that for Time Machine?
Yep, for new backup, and then you could erase the 4-terabyte if you want to. So it depends if you want. It depends if you want to keep your old backups just in case.
Right.
I would. Frankly, what you're giving me an idea is if I take the old machine as is and just copy it somewhere so I have it in case I need to get something that's, you know, as of last week. I don't think I need to go back 6 years, but at least I'll have an image of what, in case I missed bringing something over or something like that.
Yeah. Right. We usually tell people wait at least 2 weeks.
Yeah, at least.
Before they erase their old machine. But, if you don't have to erase it, don't. You never know.
Hard drives have gotten so cheap.
Right.
Yeah. Especially the spinning
drives. Yeah. So, and let me ask you a related question, Bob. Is the old Mac Mini an Intel machine?
Yeah, that was the last one.
What a perfect thing to put Linux on and play with.
Okay. Yeah, I could have predicted that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, maybe I will. That's not a bad idea because it's got plenty of storage. It was powered enough, but that wouldn't take the latest Mac OS.
Right.
That's what put me over the top here.
No, I get it. And the new Mac Mini is certainly going to be much faster and much nicer. But again, if what you mostly are using it for is data storage, then an external spinning drive, an HDD, would be more than adequate. And you can get those in, you know, 2, 3, right, 4 terabytes for nothing.
And then I got to make sure that that's backed up, probably cloud or several backups.
Well, now, one thing you could do with your old Mac Mini is use it, put it on the network.
Yep, as a backup server.
Oh, interesting.
With a Mac Mini, it's easy enough to plug a hard drive into it for backup. But with laptops, we constantly see people forgetting to plug their backup drive in. And so wireless backups are slow, but they get the job done. And if you have it, when you need it, right, that'll be great.
So you can take the
big drive.
Yeah,
and you got a terabyte drive in there. So you wouldn't use it to as a time machine because I don't know that it would hold enough backups for you. But as a backup of just the data.
That's all you really want anyway.
You could put a whole lot of stuff on there. And you could run it headless, right?
Yep.
So you get it set up and working properly, then stick it in another room somewhere and just let it back up over the network. You don't care.
Yeah, I like that.
But don't put it in a closet because then that tends to overheat.
Yeah, I have already noticed that thing overheated occasionally, and this new one seems way cooler. I haven't had it but 3 or 4 days, but yeah.
Right. But yeah, so I would be, you know, you've got an awful lot of options here. Take some time, think about it, and make a plan.
Yeah.
Okay. No, sounds good. Appreciate your help, guys.
All right, have fun.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. I'm always excited to see an old machine reused, whether it's, I would put Linux on it, but I might use it as a backup.
Yeah.
Right?
One of the weird things that happened, well, the Mac Mini used to be the most expandable machine. It had all the ports on it. It had a replaceable hard drive. replaceable RAM. And then there was a model that had soldered RAM but a replaceable drive. And then the next model had soldered drive but replaceable RAM.
Yeah. Okay, hold on.
And the next model is technically, it's not user replaceable, but the current Mac Mini, it's a M.2 on a PCI slot. And there's but not a normal PCI slot. So there are a couple of companies making third party upgrades, but it's not for the faint of heart to take them apart, and it kind of never was.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Will, which I'm hoping that's supposed to say Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Will. What's up?
Hello, gents. Not too much. How's everything going up there?
Peachy.
Freezing her butt off.
Well, yeah, if you like frozen peaches, it's going peachy. How are you doing down there? Are you in the snow belt?
We're just outside of it, but ironically, we're actually going to get hit hard overnight. They're forecasting like 6 inches.
For you guys, that's that's
yeah.
No, for those guys,
yeah,
because you guys don't have any snowplows.
Oh, we do. We actually do.
You do?
Yeah. Public Works does have plows in Hampton,
and they don't know what to do with them.
You're right.
So, my question actually kind of dovetails on the conversation about Copilot. I queried Gemini just a few minutes ago to find out why it has become such an anathema, the whole situation with Copilot. And in the short end of the stick is that it's basically surveillance, like you guys were saying. Now, here's my question. As I mentioned in a previous call, I very seldom use Windows. I use the Linux partition on both of my machines. So I'm just kind of wondering, you know, what am I concerned about?
Okay, so anything you've put into the Windows side, any data, any passwords, any of that stuff, has Copilot sees that. And
okay.
Much of it gets backed up to your OneDrive.
OneDrive, yeah, I knew that.
And therefore, Microsoft has access to it.
I see.
So,
That's good.
So, one of the things that people are complaining about is that one of the things that OneDrive, when you set up Windows nowadays, you must, generally, you must use a Windows login.
Yeah.
That automatically turns on OneDrive, and OneDrive automatically backs up the key to decrypt your hard drive.
Wow.
And they will give that key to any law enforcement agency who asks them for it.
Not even with needing a warrant.
Right. No, just asks for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the average user, I don't suspect that much matters.
Right. Okay.
But for a journalist or for someone in a repressive regime,
yeah,
that's a big deal. Copilot also has a lot of access to everything you do, like I said, including your passwords. The new version is going to be able to do things for you. So you'll be able to say, I would like you, you know that sweater I looked at last week on Amazon?
Yep.
Buy it for me. Well, that means it knows where you went. It knows what you looked at.
Yes, that's the cost.
It has your credit card information. And it's not reluctant to use it. And people are unhappy. But shockingly, people are unhappy about this, Will.
We want that service, but we don't want to lose the privacy that service requires.
Exactly right. And
that's why you hire a personal assistant. But then they know everything about you, too.
Well, right. Well, I've said this before. Every day we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in America.
Yeah.
You know, like I said a couple of weeks ago, as a matter of fact, since I've had Windows 11, I've actually only used it like maybe for about the first 6 months of last year, and that was it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, let me start with this, Will. Any any passwords you put into it, I would change those passwords immediately on every mm-hmm. other system.
Mm-hmm.
If your login password is something you've used before, I would change it on every other system.
Am I wanting to change? Okay. I think if I understand you correctly, I'm wanting to change whatever password I used for Windows 11.
If you have used that password somewhere else.
Oh, no. I'm
right.
not.
Right,
no,
right, right.
No.
So there are some people who always use, you know, trust no one or password 123 or whatever it is.
It's 1234 now.
It's 1234 now. Let's be more safe. 1234 mm-hmm. asterisk. And so those they use that same password everywhere. Well, that's convenient. But it also means now everybody knows that password.
This is what I remember having done. Okay, for the Lenovo desktop, I do recall using a single password, but I've not used it anywhere else.
That, and then you're safe. See, the idea is that each mm-hmm. system you log into should have a different password. Now, I admit that when I am setting up a temporary machine before I give it to somebody else, I always use the same password. But that password is used nowhere else but on those temporary machines, and I don't care because I don't have any actual data on them, and I don't
right.
use them for anything except setting up the machine. But in general, you know, that I mean, so let you know, let's be intelligent about this. But in general, any machine that you care about, any machine that you use regularly, any place that you put in your password that you care about, make it long and make it unique.
It doesn't have to be gobbledygook, just
right.
long. You know, four words or
horse battery, whatever.
Stable, well, that's why NPass does a great job.
Well, yes, and yes, using something like that is great. But whatever you do, mm-hmm. the important thing is don't use any password in a Windows machine that you would worry about getting out to other people. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Copilot sees everything you do and saves it all to OneDrive, and Microsoft will hand over your OneDrive data to any agency that asks.
Okay, well, in that regard, last question. How would I go about searching OneDrive to see, you know, like that, to get a visual of that information that I've put?
Much of it is hidden in hidden registry keys.
System files.
System files that you really don't get much access to.
Right.
So, you know, I would say, think about all the passwords you've ever put into any Windows program and then change them and don't use the Windows version again.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, like I said, I really didn't do that much with Windows soon after I got the new machine, so.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Most everything I've done now has been either with Zorin or Ubuntu, and that's been, like, I think, going on for another 6 months now.
Yeah, good.
Getting close to 9 months, yeah. Even everything I do at Virginia Peninsula Community College, I haven't needed to use Windows since last spring.
Yep,
that's good.
Good for you. That's the way to do it. That's
mm-hmm.
that's how you stay safe and secure.
Yes. Okay, well, I think I got my answers, fellas.
There you go, Will. Have fun down there, and good luck with the next snowstorm.
Thanks, Nick.
Yep, bye-bye. Yep.
Take good care, day, my then. Friend.
All right, then, bye.
You can tell I'm traumatized by this winter. I couldn't say the word snowstorm.
Yeah. So apparently the new chief of the U.S. Cybersecurity Agency.
Oh, yeah, that's a... Yeah, I got
uploaded...
This
Oh, is it?
No,
in the,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
Uploaded a bunch of sensitive documents to ChatGPT.
Yep.
And I'm guessing his question was, how do I be a security chief? Apparently.
Well, he had to get special permission to do it.
Yeah.
And he got that special permission and then immediately gave ChatGPT, which is open to pretty much everybody, a whole bunch of security information for the United States. Brilliant. Only the best people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Set off the alarms, which is good.
Well, right. But yeah, those alarms
now.
Are, the door, the barn door is already open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That horse has left the building.
He was selling shoes last week.
Yeah. Yes.
Poor soul.
Poor soul, but I'm bummed. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Try the veal. Yeah. So, yeah, be careful what you put into what and where. And the simple fact is that Copilot watches and listens to everything you do. That was what Recall was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Recall was taking snapshots of your system every couple of seconds and sending it to Microsoft. And I don't think Recall has gone away as much as hidden itself. All right, that music tells us the first hour of this show is done. I want to thank all the people who called in. These are great questions. But do not despair and do not go away, because there's an entire another hour of the of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. Go ahead and take that bio break. Get yourself a snack of some sort, a beverage, adult or otherwise. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And while you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 800-790-0415, wonderful here from Jerry from Iceland.
Yeah.
Again. Yeah. Where it was warmer than here.
I don't want to hear him this week because it'll be warmer there again today.
Yeah.
He's just going to call and rub it in. I'll read some Microsoft news. Microsoft has now confirmed that PCs are crashing into the new darker black screen of death following January's mandatory security update. The good news is that the crashes are preventable. The bad news is that the underlying issue is not. If you are affected, the escape route is painful. The black screen of death, or BSOD, or BSOD, appears with unmountable boot volume error and requires customers to manually recover their computer. This means it is no longer possible for affected PCs to boot. To recover the PC, Microsoft says you need to enter WinRE, the Windows Recovery Environment, and use one of the available methods. And that is all so easy for the average user, and I certainly hope you have a good recent backup. Because you may well lose all of your data. If your modem, yes, some people still use those things, stopped working after installing the January 2026 security update for Windows 11, you are not alone. At first glance, it looks like yet another bug, but it's not. Microsoft specifically removed support for a number of modems. So if you use one, you're out of luck. Get fiber, you peon. What, you live somewhere that's not available? Tough, Microsoft has abandoned you. Microsoft has suppressed an unexplained anomaly on its network that was routing traffic. Notice they didn't say it was an unknown or odd anomaly. They're just not explaining it. That routed traffic destined, for example, .com, which is a domain reserved for testing purposes, to the maker of electronic cables located in Japan. Microsoft is keeping mum on the reason so far, so it's anybody's guess if it was a simple misconfiguration or something more sinister. On Monday, Microsoft released emergency out-of-band security updates to patch a high-severity Microsoft Office zero-day vulnerability already being exploited in attacks. In addition to the patch, Microsoft has issued instructions on how to, and I quote, reduce the severity of exploitation, end quote. Not remove it, but reduce it.
Get rid of Windows. Cough, cough, cough.
Get rid of Word.
This involves editing the registry, because of course it does, and it leaves me confused. Does the patch fix the problem, or do you need to edit the registry anyway? And why doesn't the patch edit the registry? Also, please remember this patch was not included in January's Patch Tuesday update, nor was it included in the emergency patch that patched Patch Tuesday, nor the emergency patch that patched the patch that patched Patch Tuesday. Since this is the last day of January, it's likely the last January patch we'll see, but the day's not over yet.
Mm-hmm.
And now, some good Microsoft news.
Huh?
And you can give us a... No. Microsoft plans to introduce a call reporting feature in Teams by mid-March, allowing users to flag suspicious or unwanted calls as potential scams or phishing attempts. The new report a call function will be enabled by default, but administrators who want to disable the new security feature can toggle it off. Currently, users have no simple way to report suspicious calls. A new update is making it easier to resume mobile apps on your PC, but only with a select group of services for the time being, including Spotify, Microsoft's Office suite of apps, and Edge browsing sessions, but only for Android users. But we're here for everybody, so give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415.
Apple just released an update for 12-year-old phones.
Yes.
Still running OS 12.
Yes, and I commend that. That's actually also, that I commend them for that. That is, I mean, to support a phone that's 12 years old, they're not making any money off of that.
Yep.
Not that Apple needs your money. But they've got shareholders. Same thing we talked about at the top of the show with Microsoft.
But it's good PR.
Well, it's not only good PR, but there are still a lot of people using those OS 12 phones.
Right. Well, that's what I mean.
And they don't want to abandon them.
If you can stretch them along a little bit farther until the phone really starts acting up, maybe the battery not holding the charge or it's not doing this, you're going to get them to go to the next version.
They've probably replaced the battery twice by now.
Yeah, right.
They've missed OS 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and now 26 is the current version.
Right. Right. So, I commend them for that. Contrast that with Windows 10. I commend them. They have all my respect for that.
Well, with Windows, again, we have said this before. Having issues with Word. We have said, like I said, countless times, you don't have to use Word. 90% of the folks out there, unless you're, using templates like a lawyer or a doctor and all that, the average user at home can use LibreOffice, Google Docs.
The average user in an office can use LibreOffice or Google Docs.
Yeah, but you can store it up there on the cloud, free storage. It doesn't take away from your 15 gig. So I create all my documents in Google Docs.
I've got well over 65,000 documents in Google Docs, things I've saved over the decades. I imported them all into Google Docs, and I said translate them into Google's format so they don't take up any space.
And Google can sit there and read just about any format.
And write just about any format.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's an old version of Word or a newer version.
For most of 30 years. I used LibreOffice at RIT in the College of Business where everybody else had Microsoft Office. Nobody knew.
Pardon? Yep. The big key is load the Microsoft fonts.
You want to load the Microsoft fonts, and you don't want to use any. Well, even so, if you use a font that somebody else doesn't have, it won't show up anyway.
Yeah. Which is a problem even on Windows.
Right. So that was, but yes, you can load the Microsoft, the MS. Core Fonts TTF, I think is what it's called. And it loads Verdana and Trebuchet and Times and you know, all the Courier and those. So that's how that all works.
I don't know why you had problems reading Virginia, V-I-G.
V-I-G for Virginia.
Vig.
I didn't know if it meant vigorish or vinegar or I didn't.
What state?
You had to pay his vig.
He had to pay the vig. Exactly yeah. Right. All right, back to the phones. Our
keep
next
you guessing.
Keep me guessing. Our next caller is Judy from Webster, New York. What's up, Judy?
Okay, I have a question. You talk a lot about Linux.
Yeah.
And you never mention the Chrome operating system for a Chromebook. Is there a reason for that?
No. None whatsoever. I have a Chromebook. I love Chrome OS.
Depends on the user.
Right. The thing about Chrome OS is for the average user, you don't need more. You can do all your web browsing. You can do webmail. You can do Google Docs or Microsoft 365 online or whatever they're calling it this week. And all of that stuff with a Chromebook. Chromebooks are inexpensive, but very good. They're fast. They're reliable. When I go on a trip or a vacation, I take a Chromebook because I can do everything I need to do. And if I lose it or break it or whatever, I haven't lost, you know, it's not a $1,000 laptop.
Because they don't have much storage either.
Right.
Everything is done up in the cloud.
Well, I want to convert my old laptop, and I wanted to do. From what I understand, is that Linux is a little more complicated than Chromebook.
A little bit, maybe.
More technically, a little more versatile because you can run more types of programs. But for most people, all they want is web and mail and photos.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you want to do that, you can use Chrome OS Flex.
Okay, Chrome OS Flex.
Flex,
F-L-E-X. And I just popped that link to the top of the list.
And that link is now at the top of our list on soundbites.org. I have put Chrome OS Flex on a number of machines, particularly when it's a low-end machine. It is the perfect operating system for that.
If you've only got 4 gigs of RAM or less.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I think it requires 2, but works better with 4. I don't remember off the top of my head.
I think you're right.
Yeah, there's more than that on this machine, so I'm not concerned.
Yeah. Chrome OS Flex it works very much like any other installer. You download the installer, you put it on a thumb drive using Balina Etcher or Rowena or one of those programs. And then you boot with that thumb drive and install Chrome OS Flex just like you would any other operating system. It takes a few minutes. It boots up in less than 10 seconds.
It's like you're running the Chrome web browser all the time and just never quit.
Right, essentially. Mm-hmm.
So I have to put it on the thumb drive? I can't put it directly on the machine?
You have to move it from wherever you download it. See, what you have to do is it works like in the old days with CD-ROM drives.
An installer disk.
You need an installer disk. And if you still have a CD-ROM drive on that machine, then you could put it on burn a CD and put it on that. But what most people do now is they download the ISO, it's called, which is the compressed version of the operating system. And then they use a program like Balina Etcher or Rowena or what's the other one that Microsoft uses? Rufus. Thank you. To make it a bootable thumb drive. And then you boot the old machine with that thumb drive and it runs Chrome OS. And one of the choices on the desktop will be install.
Okay. Well, I do have CD-ROM on that machine. So,
well, you could burn a CD to do that the same way. You've normally ever burned a CD, so you can put your ISO onto the CD, Again, you
there's, they also have the Chrome recovery utility that runs inside of Chrome. That makes it easier.
Recovery. Okay, I'll look at it.
The Chrome recovery utility, I believe, runs on a whole bunch of systems, I think, because it runs through the Chrome browser.
Right. I'm trying it on my Mac here to see what it does.
Yeah, and what you... Thank you, I'd completely forgotten about that. But that's for real Chrome. I don't know that works for Chrome OS Flex.
That pointed me to that utility as the recommended way to make the install disk.
Excellent. Well done, Google. Well done. So you can install the Chrome Recovery Utility through the Chrome Web Store into your Chrome browser.
Okay.
And then run it, and it will lead you through the steps to install Chrome OS Flex on a thumb drive, which you then boot in the old machine and install. That made it a lot easier. Excellent.
You need an 8 gigabyte or larger flash drive or SD card, so it won't fit on a CD or even a DVD. It needs 8 gigabytes.
Right.
It says.
And Belina Etcher is the safer one to use because it won't allow you to inadvertently select your hard drive and erase, what's already on it.
I believe that's also true of the Chrome Recovery Utility.
Yeah, I haven't tried that, but I'm just going from what...
Okay.
I like Belina Etcher because it's kind of fail-proof for folks to do it because, quite often they're making the image on one computer and taking it over to another one. And you don't want to mess up your main computer, by inadvertently wiping that out.
Right.
Okay. My second question is, at one time I thought I heard you say that you didn't have to use OneDrive. Do I have to keep OneDrive?
No.
No.
But it's very tricky to stop using it.
Well, right. So Microsoft pretty much insists you use OneDrive. They will keep turning it on every time there's an update, even if you turn it off. But you can turn it off.
Mm-hmm. I do religiously.
Yeah. But like I said, like Steve said, it is very hard to permanently turn it off. But if once you install Chrome OS, you never have to look at it again.
Okay.
It really is only a thing for Microsoft.
That's one thing I haven't tried doing is with Revo Uninstaller.
Oh, you can certainly try.
I have Revo.
I imagine the next Windows update would reinstall
it. Yeah, it would.
Hey,
yeah.
But...
Yeah. So one of the things Microsoft says is that if you put all your stuff on OneDrive, that's sort of a backup. It's better than nothing, but it isn't as good as a real backup.
Right.
But better than nothing is better than nothing. Yeah.
Well, I have two backups. I have Carbonite, and then I have an external one.
Yep. Perfect. Yeah, most people don't need OneDrive, and the main reason is that it's only 5 gig.
I'm out of gig. That's why I want to get rid of it.
Yep.
Right.
I just popped the link for uninstalling OneDrive.
There you go. So that's at the top of our list right now.
The thing that will happen is though it takes everything that's in your OneDrive folder now and puts it in an archive folder.
Right.
And then you have to go find it.
Right. So I would make a backup of all your data first because it may move it into an archive folder you're just never going to find. And make
sure. Even if it does that, I'm not sure why I would go in there looking for anything.
Well, because it's all of your documents.
Well, it moves all the documents on your hard drive as well.
Well, not all of them on your hard drive, all of them in your home folder. So everything in your documents folder now.
Right. So if you kept all your data in outside your home drive.
Yeah, I'd do it on Google Drive. Yeah.
Right, but if you kept it on your hard drive in a folder that wasn't in your home directory, OneDrive wouldn't back it up.
I wish you guys would give some lessons.
do not tempt me. I have enough on my plate.
I will tempt you. Every week I will tempt you.
Keep listening, yeah.
What'd she say? I was.
We should give lessons.
And I said every week I will tempt you.
Yeah, she will. She'll tempt us every week.
Too bad we don't know somebody that works with a remote learning company.
I know. I should.
Yeah.
I know. This is entirely on me, and I admit it.
Well, we do it twice a week already.
Right. Every Wednesday. Every Sunday night for the free Sound Bites thing. Every Sunday night at 9 p.m., we are on Mastermind Lounge, and we answer people's computer questions. And mostly we chit-chat about whatever we want to talk about. Everybody's welcome to join us. The link is on the Soundbites webpage, how to join us in the lounge. And everybody's welcome. Every Sunday night. And if enough people are interested, I might teach a course, but because it would happen on Mastermind Lounge, I'd have to charge for it.
But that's okay. If you do that, I want to come.
All right, Judy's in. Anybody else is in? Let me know, and I'll put together a couple of online courses. I would be happy to do that, but I would have to charge for it.
Yeah.
I don't care about the charge. I like to do hands on. And
all right. I will put
not a
some,
lot of places.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. All right, I'll put together some simple courses, and I love to hear. I don't care what you charge. I love to hear that. That's my favorite part.
Check with your local library or community center, because many of those have computer classes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I have, but there's one that it's a group, and they don't know a lot. But there is a guy that comes there twice a month in Webster. And
yeah, there's like one guy that goes around to all the different Monroe County lights. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, Judy, we got to move on. We got calls.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks,
Thank
Judy.
You very much.
Thank
okay.
you.
Bye.
Our little temptress, she'll be calling back next week, I'm sure. I have thought about putting classes together online, and I will.
You're
I'll
retired now. You've got
list.
All this free time.
Yeah, all this free time. Exactly right. I will move that up on my list. I'll make a Judy list, and I'll put her.
Judy.
What? Judy. You know, he never actually said that in any movie ever.
Yeah, it's like played again, Sam. And
right. All right. I will move that up on my to-do list. If anybody else would like to be part of that class, please. Call and let us know, because the more people who say they're interested, the more likely I am to do it. All right, back to the phones.
Wait. Before we get into that, folks, when I've said this before, I wear hearing aids. We're in a very small studio. So please don't get upset if I ask you two or three times to please repeat your name and where you're calling from.
You don't have to whisper. Dave does.
Right.
Yeah, because they're carrying on a conversation. We're running a live radio show. And trying to hear what your name is, why? Because you talk very slow and very low. I can't always hear you. So that's why I ask two or three times. So please, don't be offended, but I will keep doing it until I get it, because then Nick sits there and says, where's this from? Who's their name? It's what I can interpret. No offense, please, taken.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is probably Sherry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Sherry?
All right, first of all, Dave, I wasn't trying to be mad. I was just trying to shout so you could hear me.
No, no, not you, Sherry. There's, like I said, there's, matter of fact, now four that more just, calls backing up.
That just reminded him to let
to mention it. Not you, young lady.
Okay, all right. Well, okay. Well, good afternoon, guys. My question is, I've seen notifications that pop up on my phone about Chrome not being able to update for the past week or so. And I have noticed on my Chromebook there hasn't been any updates either. The phone is another story. I got a Pixel 7. So I was just wondering, is that true, or have you heard anything about that?
I have not. I have a Pixel 7, and I haven't seen any notifications either. But what I would suggest you do is you go into the app, into Settings and Apps. Yeah. And then in both the Google Play Store and in Google Play Services, clear both the cache and the data.
Oh, all right.
Also, make sure you have at least a gigabyte free of storage, because if your phone is too full, then it can't download the update to install it.
Okay.
My wife had that problem. She said, I keep getting this notice that my phone is full. I said, well, honey, if you delete the 700 or 800 photos you have of the inside of your pocket, you might free up some space on your phone.
Well, I don't have a space problem, and I'm sure I have enough RAM, but...
No, it's not RAM, no, it's storage.
RAM. Yeah, it's storage.
So if you go in...
Oh, I definitely got enough storage.
All right, then clear the cache and the data for both the Google Play Store and the Google Play services.
Okay, so that goes for the Chromebook, too?
Yes, you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. That in both cases, that should help.
Yeah, because I just noticed the past week, no updates at all. And then I did read that notification online about Chrome was having a problem with updates, and something was going on.
Yeah, I found a couple of things in the Chrome help help forums where people have been out and saying that, and clearing the cache seems to be fixing it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So give that a shot and let us know.
Okay, one more thing. I still have it, McAfee, LiveSafe, and all that, because I used to have a Windows computer, and I shut it down in October. So it's also on my phone. Does the Pixel phone, does it need an antivirus on it or not?
It depends on what you do with your phone. If you look at documents, if you look at your email, things like that, then yes.
Oh, really? Even on a Pixel?
Yeah, well, look, one of the things is you may pick up a Windows virus, which will not hurt your phone, but what if you pass that on to someone who has a Windows device, if you forward an email to someone? So being a good net citizen means checking that stuff yourself.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Well, any suggestions? Because I'll probably get rid of McAfee, so...
AVG has a good one. That's what I use.
For the phone?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And, well, what about the Chromebook?
The Chromebook is less of a problem, but okay. Generally speaking, because you're looking at your email in Gmail, it won't be a problem.
Okay. All right. I got it.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, we're going to take a quick break. I've completely lost track of the time. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We've got some calls backed up, but we'll get to them as fast as we can and get through as many of them as we can. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm having fun.
I'm glad you are. Go ahead.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Rick from Pittsford, New York on the line. What's up, Rick?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Converted over to Linux Mint. No
nice.
Longer a Windows user. And I've been using LibreOffice Calc for a decade. Question is, lately on my machine, when I either try to save or do a copy and paste in LibreOffice Calc, it locks up, and the fan comes on and just starts screaming at me, and it won't save for a good 35 to 40 seconds. The other thing is, occasionally using Google Docs, the screen, like, say, the right side, I can't use the keys to put numbers or anything like in. It's like half of the thing freezes up, and I got to reboot. Is something going on?
That all sounds like hardware to me.
Yeah.
That sounds like hardware.
Keyboard driver? You could try starting there, but that's a core service.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, that wouldn't cause the fan to come on, wouldn't cause the whole system to freeze for 30 seconds.
Have you checked it for spyware and malware?
In Linux, you can. You can use Clam AV. You should be installing that anyway.
From Security Tango.
And if you head for the Security Tango, we were going to talk about that earlier for Sherry as well. The Security Tango lists a whole bunch of software that can be used to keep your machines clean, and Linux is one of the systems, and so is
Chrome OS. Some bug or something got in there that's kind of taken away resources.
Yeah. What it sounds like is that there's an issue with either the drive or the thermal paste. How old is the machine?
It's about 5 years old. It would accept Windows 11, but it's I didn't go there.
No, mm-hmm.
No, smart move.
Makes sense. And it really does sound more like hardware than software.
Another question, if I could. I've got Clam AV on there. I don't know how to use it.
Well, okay, so there's the thing to do is you should, if you have Clam AV, you should also install Clam TK, which is the graphical front end. At that point, you can right-click on a folder or a drive or an individual file and say, check for viruses in the drop-down menu.
Is there a way to check the entire machine under that?
Well, yes. You can run Clam AV should run by itself overnight. If you look in the log file, /var/logs, you should see a Clam directory, and in that will be the logs of Clam AV. And it will tell you what it did and how long it took, and if it found anything, and all of that.
And it normally runs from the command line.
You can run it from the command line yourself.
Clam scan, unless you load the GUI on top.
Right. And you can use, Clam scan and say Clam scan / or Clam scan / home.
Path to the file. Yeah.
Right. Hello?
Okay, well, great.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, good luck. Have fun.
Yeah. Thanks, bye.
All right, and I'm just a reminder, the bank is full of calls. So if you call in, you get bounced around in the maze of phone systems here at the Greece School. Hang up and call back, because right now the bank is full.
And as Dave is frantically pushing buttons to get the next person online.
And Dave is working hard to actually do his job. Our next caller is James. Is that what I'm looking at here? James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Hello, Nick, Steve, and Dave. First of all, that lady who wants lessons, your show is one big lesson every week.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Secondly, does she want? She would need to pay about $200 per lesson to make it worth your while. So that's another thing that she should think about. And secondly, everybody who wants a lesson, they all might be needing something different. So it's hard to get a group of people that all want the same thing.
Yeah, that's
why we
problem.
Stopped doing group, even just free training at our store. With people in the same session on, like basic photos.
Mm-hmm.
People complain we went too fast. People complain we went too slow.
Right.
In the same session. So it's, all right, one-on-one now for everybody.
Right.
Yeah, it's too hard. And also, as far as Dave goes, that's not his fault. People have terrible telephone habits. They'll leave a message, and I have to listen to it like 4 or 5 times because they're talking too fast. You can't understand. These are professional people.
Right.
You can't understand them. It's like the telephone habits are terrible.
And Apple and Google are both trying to transcribe those voicemails for you. So sometimes it has a real hard problem.
Yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, my question is concerning the Spectrum emails. They changed the format. And my question to you is, if you know, are they going to completely eliminate the Spectrum emails?
There are rumors that they are. People have been told that they are. But there's nothing official we have found yet.
Yeah, well, because I called the the Spectrum guy when they changed the format, and I asked him, and he seemed to say that, no, you'll still have emails, but I don't know, a different format or whatever.
I had someone tell me they don't support mail programs anymore, POP or IMAP. You have to use the website.
Yeah.
Well, no. Every other customer is using the POP, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know themselves.
In general, James, we have always suggested that you get an email address not at your internet's provider, because and no matter who it is, because if you change providers or whatever, then you don't have to change the email address. So, you know, Google or AOL or, you know, whatever is better. DuckDuckGo is better for you than going through your provider.
I agree. My last question, what do you think of Yahoo emails?
They have had some notorious problems in the past.
Yeah.
Every single
security
one,
breaches.
Three or four years ago, every single one of their 5 billion customers got leaked.
Yep.
The head of security at Yahoo tried to say, "What's this box?" And his bosses kept saying, "Don't worry about it." And it turned out to be a tap from somebody.
Yeah.
Reading every piece of, and so he left Yahoo and formed his own security company.
Yep.
What was his name? Stamos, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Yahoo email is, in terms of general use, not bad. But
okay. As
with everything else, I would make sure that I did not use a password on that I use anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not necessarily trust it for sensitive email.
Good advice. Well, thank you very much. Keep up the good work. And the people need to talk slower and so they can be understood properly.
Thank you, James.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So that raises the question of who is good. All of them have their issues.
Yeah.
But
Yahoo tends to let more spam through.
Yeah.
We've seen.
I was about to say, the thing I like most about Gmail is the spam filters.
Yeah.
I get very, very little spam on any of my Gmail-controlled accounts.
Yeah, I see the same thing with
Apple. Whether they're on my private domains. I don't have an Apple. I'm sure it's the same there. But whether it's my private domains or my public Gmail accounts, I get very few things. Whereas, you know, on a couple of the others, holy moly, I've just stopped using them because all they are is spam.
There was a problem in the early days of AOL where they tried to block, bad words.
Right.
And they got sued for blocking somebody's business name that happened to have a piece of a bad word in it. You know?
Right. And
so now they don't block anything.
On their forums, the breast cancer survivors forum got banned because it had the word breast in it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, first of all, I don't mind Dave asking me more than once my name and location.
Thanks.
No problem.
Appreciate it.
I made the second time he asked, I may speak up and it may sound a little harsher, but that's just my
voice. That's fine, Fred. I appreciate that. No.
I try to enunciate it as best I can, but I got a gravelly voice. So what prompted me to dial was the lady that talked about the class.
Yeah.
And I'm yes, all for it. You said call in if anybody's interested. I'm interested.
All right. Okay.
So add that. And, you know, I guess the cost has upper limits. But, you know, work that out as you go.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking a fairly inexpensive group class. And then if you want private instruction, it would cost more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds fair. I probably would do both. The group, like Stephen mentioned, sometimes they go too fast and sometimes they go too slow. I think the slower is workable and the fastest gets me lost. But
right,
yeah, all that's workable.
Yeah,
And I'm all for it. A couple of weeks now, you've mentioned AVG for Windows machines. I have a full paid, Avast account for both my phone and my Windows PC that I haven't even turned on in 2 weeks, but that's a whole other thing that we've talked about before. Is AVG, in your opinion, better than Avast?
Not really.
Somebody, please hold.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Or if you're German, Knox Nix.
I went with the full paid. I went with the full paid version, and it's very intrusive. All the pop-ups that keep coming up to want me to do a VPN, and everything that I do that's on my machine, it wants to scan. I mean, yeah, it can be good and not, but it's not new. It's something that's already been done the last six times I opened that same file. So it's a little bit annoying, and I was questioning myself whether I would renew, and then you mentioned AVG a few times, and I don't know what that experience would be.
But yeah, all of them are owned by Gen Digital, the same company. Right. Gen Digital owns AVG, Avast, Norton, Avira, CCleaner. So you're going to get fairly much the same experience with all of them. And they all pretty much use the same antivirus engine these days. So whichever one gives you the least cost and is going to be the same bang for the buck.
Yeah, I've already got it, so I'll probably just keep running it.
6 of 1.
And then the Clam AV for my Linux machine.
Yeah.
Always comes up with a whole list of files that are questionable.
Yep.
And I can delete them. They'll be right back to next time I run it.
Well, yes, and it depends on what those files are and where they are.
Yeah.
A lot of times what you get are, what do you call them? Trash files that are from your mail. So your mail system trashes.
They generate it automatically.
And stuff, and it puts them in the trash, but it doesn't delete them. So AVG looks at it and says, oh, this is
junk.
Bad. And you should look at it.
Okay.
And that's why. So a lot of that will come from your email. A lot of it is generated, is temp files that are generated, and they're not being flagged as viruses. They're being flagged as unnecessary files.
Okay. Well, then they get, whatever they are, they get recreated as soon as I fire the machine back up again.
Yeah, pretty much.
A lot of it is in LibreOffice folders.
Yep.
I would appreciate in that class we're going to do a template of what ones are not to panic when you see 500 files that are questionable.
Yeah. It does occasionally produce false positive on legitimate LibreOffice files, but it also looks for macros and often flags a file with a macro in it as something you should look at.
Okay.
Because sometimes they can't look inside of files to see if that, especially a macro is a string of instructions. It can't know what it's going to do unless it runs that string, and you don't want to do that because if it's malicious.
Right, so it'll look at it and say, okay, you should take a look at this. Did you want these macros in your file? If you did, ignore it. If you didn't, deal with it.
Yeah, there's not enough information there for me to tell whether I want it or not, but they keep popping up, and they're in LibreOffice, so I've been presuming that they're not harmful.
Likely not. If there's something either you installed or came with the system, then likely not. If it's a file you got from somebody, I'd take a look.
Yeah, I don't import anything like that. I'm just using the LibreOffice to the basic three or four things through the.
Yeah. All right. Send me an email about what to put in the class.
Okay, I can do that.
Yeah. That's true for anybody. Thanks. That's true for anybody who is interested in the class. I'll tailor it. I'm easy.
I've heard that.
It's always been true. If you're interested in a class on Linux, let me know. It might end up being multiple classes. I mean, like Steve said, everybody wants something different. So it doesn't make sense to just throw a bunch of stuff in a pot.
And the users groups seem to have all sort of died off.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cider's still around, but we're online only.
Right.
Because no one can get meeting space for a few years there.
Well, that's true.
The Linux group is gone, although you can probably go to Makerspace and find someone to help, but that's not organized that way.
Right. Right. It's not designed for that sort of thing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. What's up, Jerry?
Hi, guys. Question. On a cell phone conversation between two people, is it possible for a outside third party to get into it, listen in on it? I understand most of these cell phones are encrypted. I'm just wondering if there's a way to tell if someone is getting into your conversation.
Yes and no.
Yes, they can, and there's almost no way to tell.
Right.
It generally requires a court order.
Right. So here's the thing. It's encrypted between you and your carrier. And then it's encrypted from the carrier to the other person. But at the carrier, it's decrypted.
From between carrier to carrier, even.
And between carrier to carrier, it's decrypted. So if you can manage to, if you get a court order, you can go into the carrier and say, we want to know what Jerry's talking about. When he makes a call and it comes through you, it gets decrypted. Send it to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, if...
That's why.
A court order.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Outside of a court order, could someone else just get into it?
Not easily. Not easily.
No.
But that's why a lot of people are now using WhatsApp and what's the other one? There's another one.
Telegram. Signal.
Signal. That's the one.
Signal's the good protocol.
Yeah, Signal is the one most people use now. Signal.
By Moxie Marlinspike.
Right. Moxie Marlinspike created Signal, and it is encrypted end-to-end. So you put Signal on your phone, you make calls through that, and absolutely nobody but the person at the other end can decrypt it and listen in.
There have been some interesting stories about people at phone companies listening in.
Oh, yeah.
Without a warrant.
Yeah, well, sure they can.
Yeah.
You're not listening.
Yeah.
One other thing. Is there any way you could tell on your phone if somebody's getting into it, like a signal or some kind of it's orange dot or something?
Nope. Sorry, nothing.
You can sometimes tell if your battery is draining faster than usual. There's something weird running in the background.
If they've installed something on your phone.
Yeah.
If it's somebody who just tapped into the signal, no.
No.
Strange background noise? Because they didn't put mute on their
end. Yeah, right.
Heavy breathing?
But generally speaking, no. Sorry, Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you're looking to do something that's truly private, get Signal. And you and the other person both have to use it.
Oh, so that would be for all your calls then?
Well, for any call you want private. I mean, if I'm calling for a pizza, I don't care who knows it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right, thank you very much, guys.
All right, thanks. Yeah, Signal and WhatsApp. It used to be WhatsApp, but that's had some small issues of its own, so more people are moving to Signal these days. I have a friend who lives in Manila, and she and I talk only on WhatsApp currently, but she's talking about switching to Signal as well.
Yeah.
Not that she's hiding anything. It's just the easiest and cheapest way to make phone calls, frankly.
Some countries have threatened to ban Signal because the police can't get into the conversation, and they have said that if they require us to break the encryption, we're just going to leave that country.
Yep.
So they're putting their customers first.
Yep. And good for them. I like the people at Signal. All right, we got a couple minutes left. Our next caller is Jay from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jay?
Oh, hey, guys. How you doing?
Peachy, you?
Pretty good. I have a couple questions for you. One, I have a very old laptop computer, like going back maybe Windows 7 or 8 or something like that. I've used it only offline for the past few years, but I have a bunch of old files on there, photos and Word, Excel and stuff. What I want to know is before I transfer those files over to my newer computer, should I be scanning them for viruses or anything like that? I don't think there's anything on there, but just to be super cautious, I don't want to bring anything over that may be a virus or other malware that's on those old files to the new one.
It wouldn't be bad to do that, but also when you, let's say you copy them to a thumb drive. When you put the thumb drive in your new machine, scan that before you copy them over to the main drive. So do it on both machines.
Yes, that was my first. That was my question about how to then do that.
That's the way to do that. Now, again, that will be very slow off the thumb drive. Just be patient.
Okay. Okay, so I'll scan that overnight. The second question is, I have Windows as the primary operating system, and it just updated, you know, renewed my subscription for another year. And using the cloud, basically what I noticed is, I've checked, yes, I wanted to use it because I was pulling a work file that was off the cloud also. And then all my personal files that were on my C drive basically disappeared. And it looks to me like the Microsoft cloud system, if it migrates your local files to the cloud,
yes,
then it takes them off. Is that correct?
That's OneDrive, yeah.
OneDrive does that, yes.
And then it's supposed to sync back to your computer, but now the main copy of the files are on Microsoft's computer in OneDrive.
Right, which is what I definitely do not want, because then they own it, and if you ever unsubscribe or do another operating system or things, you're going to lose that.
Make sure you have backups, because, like I said, even if you first make sure you've got backups, then turn off OneDrive, and it'll put everything in an archive folder, and then every time you do an update for Windows, it will turn on OneDrive again. So you're going to go through this over and over and over.
Even if you uninstall it, sometimes it reinstalls it.
And it'll reinstall it.
Okay. So I'll call next week to find out a better operating system.
Yeah. Yeah. Short answer, Linux. All right. We got to go. I apologize to everybody we didn't get to. You got to call earlier next week. But we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?